The European Parliament has approved, I suppose, the strictest ever in one level as being seen, and the strictest ever migration rules that will grant authorities much broader detention powers, allow for the creation of deportation centres as well outside the bloc. MEPs have voted in favour of introducing return hubs outside the European Union for people whose asylum seeker applications have been rejected by individual member states. The vote took place at the European Parliament in Strasbourg amid some angry scenes from MEPs on either side of the debate, with some members of the Patriots group chanting "send them back" and MEPs, including those in the left group, responding with "shame on you." The motion passed 418 votes to 218 with 30 abstentions. Of the 14 Irish MEPs elected to the European Parliament, 6 voted in favour. They are Fine Gael's Nina Carberry, Regina Doherty and Sean Kelly, Fianna Fáil's Billy Kelleher, Barry Cowan and Cynthia Ní Mhíreachtain. The Irish MEPs who opposed the changes, Fine Gael's Maria Walsh, Fianna Fáil's Barry Andrews, Sinn Féin's Lynn Boylan and Kathleen Function and Independent Luke Ming Flanagan. Both Labour's Éanna Reardon and Independent Ireland's Ciarán Mullooly were unavailable to attend the European Parliament this week for confirmed private reasons, and Independent MEP Michael McNamara also voted to reject the resolution. It was a deeply divisive vote, and it's about introducing a detailed return system for people whose asylum seeker applications have been rejected by the EU member states. With me on the line to talk about this is Billy Kelleher, who voted in favour. Billy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gerry.
Were you taken aback, or were you expecting those sort of divisive scenes in the Parliament around this vote, as contentious as it is?
No, I wasn't taken aback, being truthful. I knew that the far right, for example, would trumpet this as a major success from their perspective. That is the regrettable thing in all of this, is that the migration issue has become very divisive, it's become toxic, it's been hijacked, and it's being used primarily by the far right, may I say, to drive deep divisions in communities, and are using this as a political platform, effectively, to use it for campaigning purposes. And it has been very, very divisive. And I mean, what we're trying to do is deal with a very sensitive issue. We want a very firm, fair migration and asylum process. And part of that, obviously, at the end of the day, if a person goes through all the processes and his asylum application is rejected, well, then at some stage, that person would have to be asked to leave the European Union. And if that's not the case, well, then you don't have an asylum process, because it means that anybody that comes will automatically be able to stay. That is the issue that's at stake here. Of course, there was concerns, and I had those concerns. I previously raised them in votes earlier in the year around minors, unaccompanied juveniles, for example, families, who would oversee these return hubs. But on balance, we need to have a system in place that at the end of the day has integrity around the process. And in the event of a person being refused asylum, well, then they would have to leave the European Union.
Is this about the failure of the system that's in there right now to deal with that particular instance? If somebody goes through the system, they've gone through appeals process, they're told you have to leave, there's very little follow-up. A lot of them just end up staying.
Yes, that is the fact. And you might have seen there might have been an increase in the number of people deported in recent times from Ireland. But overall, the numbers of people that are being deported, I'm not one for mass deportations either, but in the event of there being a process that you exhaust and you are ultimately refused asylum, well, then, you have to leave. Because if you don't, it means that there is no asylum process. It just means that you arrive, you make an application, and whether you are granted asylum or otherwise, you can still remain. It simply undermines the whole concept. So the idea is that people would return to their home country, obviously. But if that's not the case, well, then there is a provision in there whereby the European Union or member states on their own could develop these return hubs, which effectively would be outside the European Union, and the person would be returned to that return hub for a period of time, a maximum of 2.5 years. But the difficulty is, like, if they still don't go home, what do you do with those people then? You can't keep them forever in a third state, and they're pretty much stateless. So there's a lot of work to be done on this yet, I think, into the future in terms of resourcing, making sure there's proper facilities in place. And I mean, if you're deporting families, there has to be proper facilities around education, supports and all of these things. But at the end of the day, you have to have some final arbitration. And if you fail in that arbitration, well, ultimately you must leave.
Yeah, and with that in mind, what would you say to the concerns from those in the left group who are voting against this, saying, look, this is the same as the harebrained scheme of the British government to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. I think Rwanda are suing them now over a breach of agreement. Concerns over the standards of what you just talked about there and controls and safety and human rights of people in some of these Kurd countries outside the EU. Like, how will all that be monitored and controlled in some of the states that don't have a similar human rights standard to European Union countries?
Yeah, well, look, as it stands, I mean, an individual country can do this of its own volition at the moment. But I mean, what we're trying to do is standardize this so we have, you know, the migration and asylum pact, and then it's underpinned with uniformity across all member states around the issue of returns and many other areas as well, screening, monitoring, and making sure that the member states have obligations to resource the asylum process so that when a person actually arrives in Europe, they make an application for asylum, that they are assessed quickly. For years and years, we have been in a situation where people have put down family roots and links in communities, and their process is still, or their application is still being determined, you know, 5 and 6 years later. That was completely unacceptable from everybody's perspective. At the end of the day, like you take Ireland, for example, we have a huge increase in population. We have loads of people who are coming to Ireland to work, to live, to contribute. We have people who are coming here to make applications for asylum. And, you know, we have our obligations internationally. So we assess a person for on an asylum, and if they succeed, well, they're entitled to stay. But if they fail, well, you know, they have to leave the European Union. Because what was happening previously was they were making applications right across Europe as well. And I think most people that are fair, and I'm very liberal on these issues, most people, you know, that I speak to, you know, they want and believe that we need to have a lot of people in Ireland that are contributing, they're working right across the entirety of all sectors. So we need people to come to Ireland, and it's part of our economy. But we also need to know that there's a criteria, and that there is, you know, ultimately, when a decision is made, and if you are allowed to stay, you can, and if you can't, well, you must go somewhere else. And that should be okay. To your return country. But some people may not want to go back. They may resist going back. They may become uncooperative. And these are the issues that we're trying to deal with in terms of the return homes.
Okay. There's also going to be an end to second country movements within the EU by someone seeking asylum. Does that mean if somebody lands in Italy and they didn't take a flight to Dublin and they claim asylum either in both countries or they've gone to one first and then they go, will that be banned under this new system? And what would that mean in terms of the numbers coming into Ireland where we are geographically located?
At the moment, the challenge we have is that people are coming primarily through the UK and into Ireland via Northern Ireland. That is an issue that has to be addressed as well. I mean, you know, the UK is not in Schengen. It's not a part of the Asylum Migration Pact. So, I mean, that is going to be a challenge, but that has to be resolved between Ireland and ourselves. But yes, within the European Union itself, you know, I mean, the first port of call is where you should make that application. And with the data that will be collected in terms of, you know, screening, monitoring, you know, people will know, you know, that if you apply in Italy, you know, and if you're refused or you move on, that you can't make an application elsewhere. Like, we don't even have all that data at the moment. So there's a clear obligation us to increase our capacity to liaise with all member states right across the European Union to ensure that we know how many people are making applications and where they're making applications and whether a determination has been made on their application and whether or not they are entitled to remain or whether they've been requested to leave and ultimately have they left. It's harsh in a way to talk about that because these are people. They've come to Europe for many, many reasons. But ultimately, if our asylum process is to adjudicate on whether or not they qualify for asylum, and if they don't, well, then, you know, there's reasons why they didn't.
Billy, will this have an impact and will this also deal with numbers going to individual countries? Will Europe be seen as a whole block? And if someone lands in to one particular country, and I know this was a concern for Greece and Italy in particular at the front line of all of this on the Mediterranean coast of Europe, that every country would do more in terms of taking numbers. And what implications does that have for Ireland? Or is that all to be worked out?
Well, look, I mean, there is already this burden sharing, this cooperation and collegiality across Europe that's already as part of the Migration Asylum Pact. So, I mean, if a country, you know, has an extraordinary increase in the number of people presenting in their country, either as refugees applying for asylum, or like, there has to be some form of burden sharing. I mean, we can't expect one country to take the entirety. So that way, then you can either lighten the challenges of that country by taking some of the people that are applying for asylum or just turning up as refugees, or else you can make a contribution. And that's not unusual. I mean, we help each other as member states. I mean, that's why we're in a union. You know, you can't just abandon one country to take on an entire role on its own without being some forms of support. So that's in place already. But I think more fundamentally, what we have to do is look, I mean, we do need to have legal migratory paths. I mean, the people in Ireland are shouting, you know, Ireland is full, and they're mouthing off the whole time. The fact of the matter is, we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who've come from all over the world to work across our entire sectors of the economy. It's not just in one specific area, or healthcare or hospitality, but you go to the pharmaceuticals, you go to the computing areas, there are hundreds of thousands. You visit farms, you'll see agricultural workers from all over the world as well. So we need these people, yeah, and we need to be welcoming.
Do you think there's a problem with the perception of this issue in general, and what's being portrayed by certain politicians for their own political ends, that they're pointing to migration and everyone just thinks of asylum seekers, when it's a much bigger picture of legal migration and population increase?
Yes, I mean, I think that is one of the biggest problems we have, is that we've allowed certain elements to hijack it and portray that everybody that comes to Ireland is an asylum seeker, that they're here for not the right reasons. It's all of that. And it is despicable, because what it does, it undermines the cohesiveness of our communities, of our country, and our attractiveness as a place for people to come and work and live. And like, they can say what they like, but I mean, if we didn't have migrants in Ireland, we wouldn't have buses going today in Dublin, we wouldn't have hospitals functioning across Ireland, we wouldn't have transport systems, we wouldn't have cows being milked in farms, we wouldn't have the pharmaceutical sector functioning, and we wouldn't have people being served in hotels. These are realities, and it is quite disgusting to see that divisive narrative always being thrown out, that people that are coming to this country are coming for the wrong one. The vast, vast majority, and the statistics show it, are here lawfully, legally, and contributing. And there are very few that are here unlawfully, and this particular issue will help. I won't say it will resolve, but will help in dealing with that particular area.
Okay, and is that important because of what we've seen in the UK, in particular the comments of Nigel Farage in the last week? Now, he may be talking in the context of a by-election and in the context of worrying about his own right flank, even though he's out fairly far on the right himself from the Restore Party, threatening his reforms, that he's made a promise that non-nationals will not get social housing in England, and any person who isn't English, as per his judgment, even if they've been in a house, will be deported if he gets into power. That sort of policy idea?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I've heard things like that. Well, I didn't hear them, but I've read about them in history books, and we've all witnessed in one way or another the impact that very divisive language has. We saw that in a similar mode in Northern Ireland some years ago, where we had the burning out of Catholics in Belfast in the 60s. The idea that we would pit one group of people against another, it becomes very, very dangerous very quickly. Nigel Farage is an extremist in most things, but he uses race baiting on a continual basis to promote himself on a continual basis. And the United Kingdom is a struggling country at the moment, primarily because of the fact that people followed him down the Brexit route. And he will keep dumbing down on this. But the one thing he will always use is that divisive issue around race. And using it for his political purposes. But from an Irish perspective, I believe there's an awful lot more decency in us in Ireland. But we also need to be aware that there are those that will use this. And like you hear about it, the pressures on housing. Like the majority of the people that are coming to Ireland are coming to work and to contribute, they're paying taxes. You know, they will rent a house. Ultimately, they may buy a house. We need workers to come to Ireland to help us build homes. Like this happened previously as well. So I just think we need to take a step back as a people and not start following the scaremongering, the divisiveness that's being propagated by some politicians, even in Dáil Éireann. And we saw it during the European elections as well, you know, that real race baiting.
Let me ask you this, Billy.
Jerry, I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago, actually, and there was an Indian nurse looking after me, a wonderful person, and she told me herself that she feels there's a different sense on the streets. She's dark, Indian, you know, and she's quite petite. She's no threat to anybody. But she now tells me that she senses there's a different atmosphere on the street because she's seen as a foreigner. Like, if we as a people allow that to take hold, it would be really damaging to us as a nation, and I don't believe it's in us to go down that road. But some politicians are trying to force us down that road.
Okay, what do you make of those who feel that this vote and your vote is pushing us further down that road? A listener says, the EU and our government have clearly moved to the right on migration. This is the bottom line. Your response to that?
Well, we haven't moved to the right. I mean, the Migration Asylum Pact was trying to bring a uniformity across Europe. I mean, it is still very fair. We still are compelled by international law and obligations. We still will have national judicial oversight of the decisions that are made by the Irish government in terms of asylum applications, asylum processes and returns. So there's still judicial oversight. It's not as if this is an extreme measure from that perspective. But ultimately, if there's no if a determination is made on an asylum process or application and it is rejected and the person still remains, well, then there's no point in us saying that we have an asylum process. We don't. We just have a place where people come, and if they get here, they can stay here. Now, I mean, you know, that some people may be content with that view, but as it stands, if we allow that to continue, I believe very quickly we would fuel that very divisive debate and that would be exploited by others. So I think it's also about ensuring that we have a moderate, fair, firm asylum and migration process.
Okay, Billy, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for going through that for us on the programme. That's Billy Keller, Ireland MEP for Ireland South, Fianna Fáil MEP for Ireland South, who voted in favour of the new regulations coming in and are in place now across the European Union when it comes to migration and how asylum applications are dealt with and returns in particular are dealt with. If you have a view on that, get in touch with us on the programme. A listener earlier on have been asking, how did our Kerry TDs vote on the Sinn Féin bill voting to remove the 3-day ban, a 3-day mandatory consideration period for a woman seeking abortion before 12 weeks. Well, the answer is all RTDs, bar one, voted against. Michael Cahill, Michael Healy-Rae, Danny Healy-Rae and Norma Foley, Minister Norma Foley, voted against the Sinn Féin bill, while Sinn Féin Deputy Pat Daly, as would be expected, voted with his party and voted yes in relation to that. The vote was carried 86-70.